Hi, and welcome to the Future of Dermatology podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Farah Kamangar, board certified dermatologist. We are here to talk about anything and everything dermatology related. You'll hear from me and my guests who are dermatologists, physicians, experts, scientists, residents, and medical students in the field of dermatology. We publish weekly, so if you like what you hear, hit that subscribe button and show us some love. And thank you for joining us.
Welcome back to the Future of Dermatology podcast. This is our third part of our series. So we spoke about tapinarof, the mechanism of action, peripheral hydrocarbon receptor agonist. Yeah. And now we know all the good data. How do we actually get our hands on the medication,
the hardest part,
access, right? Prescription writing, prior auths,
that
entire world.
I know, and unfortunately I think it's a reason why a lot of people don't often use some of these newer medications, right? Because they're just afraid of like the paperwork and everything that's going to be involved. But I think it's sad because we have, again, all these new treatment options and not enough people using them.
So, and then I guess I kind of checked with the latest on, but they do still have those little patient coupons.
Patient coupons
are so funny. I had a patient once for acne. I was like, so you go to this site, you get this coupon. And she's like, well, if they can get this coupon all the time, why don't they just make it that price?
Exactly.
But, you know, for whatever reason, all these different things that we don't even always understand, but the coupons are there. Most companies use them. Mm-hmm. They are helpful. I think for this one, commercially insured patients, I think they still have when it's covered. It's like $0 copayment. Yeah. I believe maybe $35 copay.
I think if it's not covered. $35.
They have those kind of assistance programs. Mm-hmm. Writing it, I think most insurers still require at least one, possibly two step through.
Yeah, so, at least here in California. I don't know how it is, kind of around the country. But in California, at least, I think they want you to have tried at least a topical steroid. And actually, sometimes I think I've gotten a couple where they also want you to have tried another non-steroid.
Right.
So like a calcipotriene or, something else before prescribing.
That's true. So if you're kind of like wanting to write it and then have the least paperwork, I guess you could think about kind of being more thorough and making sure you have written for a steroid first.
Yeah.
Plus a topical calcineurin inhibitor or one of the vitamin D analogs.
Yeah.
I think that qualifies.
And the nice thing is like, unless this is your first time diagnosing the patient psoriasis, like I bet this patient has tried some steroid along the way. And many have already tried the calcipotriene. So, even if the calcipotriene is mixed, in a formulation, like a Taclonex, like a betamethasone calcipotriene combo, that still counts, right? They've tried the non-steroid.
That's actually a really good point. Because I talk a lot, we do a lot of, in my practice, we do a lot around prior authorization and like this, this a group within PAMP that we use for prior auths and kind of optimize it. And I always tell our physicians, the number one thing is put everything in your notes.
Everything in the notes.
Like you will save yourself hassle. You do not want to get prior auth denial because then you just go into like that annoying denial world of faxes. And you want to get it like approved the first time.
Exactly.
So just put this stuff down.
And I always have a list. I have like at the end of my HPI, I usually have like a previously tried and failed. So the first time the patient comes in, I just have this like bulleted list. And then every time they come back, I just add to that list, right? Yeah. I just copy it forward and keep adding to it. So it's not much extra work.
It's like it's in there anyway.
Yeah, you're asking those questions anyways when they come in. Like, what have you tried before?
Because you want to know before you prescribe.
But just making it like very explicit, like this is what they've tried and failed, not like jumbled up into your history, a clear list.
To be super clear. Like, I'll be going to write in the assessment plan. I'll put like BSA.
Exactly.
What else do you put in there?
I do an IGA. So, zero to five, mild, clear, almost clear, mild, moderate, severe, basically. I'll put that in there. I don't do a PASI score.
You're not calculating
I'm not doing the PASI score. And I don't think many insurers need a PASI score anymore. There was a time where like I think Blue Cross Blue Shield wanted PASI scores and stuff like that, but we don't do that anymore. So I usually put an IGA or PGA and a BSA. That's
and
kind
BSA.
Of what I have in every
But that should just go in there. Mm-hmm.
And if there's a specific reason why I want a drug, right? Like if there's a specific justification, I make that like very clear in the assessment and plan of like why I'm using this drug. I don't just say like start this
given
patient is the other medications are contraindicated or the patient's doing this or whatever it is. You just want to like spell it all out very clearly.
Just gonna be, put whatever's in your head, just put it down. Kind of just assume this person is not seeing this patient because they're not. Right. So it's just all they have is kind of your
And they're looking for keywords, right? A lot of times, like recalcitrant psoriasis, tough to treat psoriasis, you know, tried and failed multiple medications. Like those keywords can sometimes go a long way.
No, it's so good. Such a good point. Just like, I always feel like the recalcitrant. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this makes much of a difference, but I add all the things like it's affecting quality of life.
Yes, absolutely.
Itch, disturbing sleep.
Exactly. Like,
I just kind of adopt phrase now for all the things.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah.
No, just to kind of, it really is, it goes to some world somewhere. Someone
and
looks
just
at it.
Looking
some
for,
algorithm.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. Yeah.
Literally.
They said they have the things.
They have the things. Yeah.
Exactly. And they tried the two medicines. So.
Right.
And then it's true, making it super clear too. And I usually just write, because some of them I see, I'll say they failed this, and then they'll come back and say, well, did they fail it in the last 6 months?
Yeah.
So literally, I will like put in there, and I'm like, failed in the last 180 days.
Exactly. Exactly.
And just like spelled super spelled.
And I think
out.
That's a nice thing. The more you actually prescribe these drugs and the more prior auths you have to do, which is terrible, but you actually learn from those prior auths. You know, like you go back and you're like, oh, they're definitely going to ask me about this next time. So you just know
just
to put it in your note
just
the first time.
Yeah.
So you just learn that way, which is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not what like practicing medicine
this
is
not where
to be
our
about.
Brain power should go.
Should go, but that is just the reality of it. That's just
it's funny. It's kind of like the when we were talking about mechanism of action, we talked about how science is kind of sometimes deterred, but you know, like just kind of going down these other paths and wasting
this
time on.
This is definitely deterring.
Wasting brain power. Prior auths are a little bit, for sure.
They're
mind numbing.
Yeah.
I do have my personal theory is if we get really, really good at them, they'll start to go away to some extent because then they'll realize it's not cost effective anymore because
we're still getting the drugs that we want.
Getting the drugs.
Yeah.
So I think the companies will look at numbers. Physicians petitioning, I think, will never really work because the companies need a way to kind of keep track of really expensive medications.
Right. Right.
But I think if the rates, because I think I saw for one medicine happen when I think the acceptance rates were like more than 94-96%.
Interesting.
And they like ease
That's
up
when
on
they stop.
Prior odds. So because it costs them more money to,
right, to
have
the
gatekeeper.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
I think
that's interesting.
That's my secret way of
so keep prescribing.
Keep prescribing and make and like just get things
smart,
and just know what things you have to put in there. You know your patients have probably used all these therapies.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially if they're coming to you at UCSF.
Exactly.
By that point, they've probably been referred and like multiple.
Yeah,
referrals,
I'm lucky in that way. I mean, it's pretty easy for me to get most therapies because again, like I don't leave like a foot for the insurance companies to stand on. I'm basically like, I put it all in there and they've tried everything and this is all that's left. So
you can use like prior auth ninja.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. We're getting this approved. So.
Exactly.
But access is it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
I think like private practice docs and maybe physicians that like might not have as much support, it's easy to just say, oh, let's, you know.
Yeah.
Not go there because it's hard.
Yeah.
But then I think patients are coming to the board certified dermatologist for the more innovative therapies, for the higher levels. So it's a little more work, but once you start doing a bunch of them, it's not, it becomes just workflow.
Exactly. So exactly. I agree. And don't, you know, you can use your staff for a lot of things. Again, like once things are templated and, you know, you have workflows, like you said, you know, you can use your staff for things like this.
True.
It's not something that you have to be doing on your own all the time. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's true. Just maybe to putting a little bit of like education around.
Yeah.
Prior auth for the staff, so they know these things too.
Exactly.
Like make sure if you're faxing stuff in, maybe print, make sure it's in the note. If it's not, print out the med rec, send that in with it. So
exactly.
All those like little pieces. But.
Yeah. Totally.
Perfect.
Totally.
But
and don't forget, you know, like I think a lot of people are afraid to prescribe these drugs for patients with Medicare or, you know, Medi-Cal here in San Francisco, Medicaid around the country. But you know, I've actually had pretty good luck. I have a few Medicare patients who have gotten tapinarof or VTAMA through their Medicare plan. So I think even within Medicare, you know, again, I don't understand all the details. There's different plan, you know, levels and people have like supplemental insurance and things like that. So I definitely think it's worth a try. And again, you know, in patients who are sometimes older and have more fragile skin and thinner skin to start with, I think,
a
non-steroid is really, really helpful for those patients.
That's a good point. You don't want to add to the atrophy.
Yeah.
You don't want to worry about like systemic absorption if the
skin's
a little bit thinner. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And then I know we asked it for the other three. So what last with our end with our future of
the future of access.
What do you think the future of access is? Maybe it's just us beating the system by being really, really good.
Exactly.
I don't know.
I hope that's the case.
Do you have any thoughts for access? Future of just getting the medicines after we
I think we need. I think we need you to develop some type of AI.
Oh, okay.
Within to just, you know, alter our notes automatically, right? So that we don't have to be thinking about
that's
this.
True.
Like, can AI just go in and be like, well, this is how we're going to get this medication approved.
Yeah.
And just make the changes for us.
Yeah, 100%.
Beat the system.
I've talked a lot about this and I'm a little biased, obviously, but I think that that is the future.
Yeah.
A lot of this, like, automation has to happen with AI. Generative AI is so smart now.
Yeah.
It can do
totally
sometimes much smarter than me, even once you get the right info, because it has to have the right database to pull from.
Exactly.
It's like the best use of it is rules like this. Mm-hmm. Check if this is in there. If it's not, you know, ask me if
again,
it is.
Again, so we don't have to use our brain.
So we don't have to use
it. Like, AI should be our tool that, like, expands our brain, not, like, you know,
exactly
takes over it.
Yeah. So I think hopefully these tech abilities will just, like, empower even, like, this all, especially, like, all settings, but especially, like, the private practice docs or people that just maybe don't have as many staff around.
Staff, yeah, the resources.
Yeah. I agree. I think AI is also the future. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
This is really fun. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Sounds good. And thanks for joining on the Future of Dermatology podcast.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Future of Dermatology podcast. Remember to hit that subscribe button and share the podcast with your friends. The more you share and subscribe, the more we'll be able to grow and share our dermatology knowledge. If you have burning dermatology questions, feel free to leave them in the comment below and we would love to address them in a future episode. And please note that this podcast is not intended to substitute for medical advice from your doctor.